Before we get started with this edition of Politics Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace's award-winning templates are the most beautiful way to present your ideas online. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code POLITICSWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
The Guardian.
I'm not going to be calling a snap election. I've been very clear that I think we need that period of time, that stability, to be able to deal with the issues that the country is facing and have that election in 2020.
I have just chaired a meeting of the Cabinet where we agreed that the government should call a general election.
It was the mother of all U-turns. Theresa May had told us at least seven times that there would be no snap election, but there it was. The third national vote in 3 years. Or 4 and 4, if you're Scottish. Which perhaps has us all feeling a bit like Brenda.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this. There's too much politics going on at the moment. Why does she need to do it?
Welcome, I'm Anoushka Astana, this is Politics Weekly, and joining me on this snap election special is Guardian columnist Raphael Baer, The Observer's chief leader writer Sonia Soda, and a man who knows about elections, Giles Kenningham, former head of press for the Tories and special advisor to David Cameron. Giles, imagine you're still in Downing Street, Theresa May is Prime Minister. Is this what you would have advised her to do?
Yeah, I think it's a tactical masterstroke. I think there's two big advantages for her on this. One, if she gets a big majority, it gives her more room to manoeuvre when she's negotiating with the European Union. Otherwise, you had a situation whereby, you know, she was having to rush through a two-year deal and then go to the polls in a year's time, and the EU would have known that. I think also, if she gets a clear mandate with the electorate and a bigger majority in Parliament, it gives her more room to manoeuvre with her own party and set out a clearer agenda, and she won't be held hostage by any factions within her own party. So,
to what extent do you think that's about reducing the voice of the Ramonas, as they may be called, or about reducing the voice of hardline Brexiteers?
Look, I think she's kind of in a situation where she needs a mandate, and this gives her that mandate. And at the moment, she hasn't. Everyone saw what happened to Gordon Brown, how, you know, he bottled the election that never was. And also by doing this, she removes a narrative of Theresa Maybe. You know, no one can ever accuse her of not being decisive now.
And Sonia, that's absolutely true, isn't it? You know, she hadn't got a mandate and now she's going to go out and get one. Completely reasonable move.
I mean, I have to say, I completely agree with Giles that from her perspective, her own political perspective, you know, the question is really, why did she wait so long? Not, you know, why is she going to the country now? Yeah, on this question of a mandate, yes, she'll get a mandate. But the sort of problem is when, in our system, when you haven't got a really effective, dynamic opposition, I mean, she's going to win the election. We all know that. So she can basically stick anything in the manifesto that she wants. She doesn't really need to provide that much more definition about the type of Brexit she's going for. And we saw that in her Today programme. Interview this morning. So yeah, she'll get a mandate. The question is for what?
And why is there absolutely no question about her winning the election?
Because I just think if you look at where Labour are in the polls now, I mean, some of the polls at the weekend had Labour over 20 points behind. Jeremy Corbyn is a big drag on his party's brand. He's got terrible personal ratings as leader of the Labour Party. It's just impossible to see. If Labour managed to come back from that and even managed to hold on to every seat that it's got, that would be quite remarkable in of itself.
But Raphael, I'm not sure if you're going to offer Jeremy the support that he perhaps needs right now, but why is he so far behind in the polls? And let's be honest, the polls have got it wrong once or twice.
The polls have got it wrong in the past. When they have done, they've generally tended to overstate support for the Labour Party. They haven't got it as wrong as some wishful thinkers on the left like to state. Some things have been very consistent, which is if you are behind on trust with the economy, if you're behind on leadership ratings and very far behind in what we thought was the sort of midterm situation as a party in the headline number, you don't come back. Look, Jeremy Corbyn's gone to a place that you just don't come back from in polling. Nick Clegg went to it, he didn't come back. Ed Miliband on his personal ratings was actually there.
I think we're having a comeback of both Nick Clegg and Ed Miliband, aren't we?
Well, neither of them is Prime Minister. Now, But the underlying problem, like you can, there's a very thorny argument you can get into going back to 2015 as to whether Labour should have moved to the left more or had moved too far to the left, and look, and people on the left can get very bogged down in that argument. Look, it seemed pretty clear in 2015 to a lot of people who weren't deeply involved in Labour politics that Jeremy Corbyn was simply not qualified or practically capable of performing the functions of the leader of the opposition. That means running a national political party, holding the government to account, doing all the things that are the practical job description of the job that he took. Now he is the candidate for a job which is much, much bigger. It's being prime minister, it's being in charge of your money, it's being in charge of a nuclear arsenal, it's negotiating Brexit. There is simply no way, absolutely no way, that you can go to the country that 2 years ago said, looked at Ed Miliband and thought, nah, I don't think so, I'm not going to make that guy prime minister, offer them instead Jeremy Corbyn as prime minister and not get completely hammered.
Oh. I think there's two dangers for the Tories though on this. One is turnout. I think if people think they're going to win, they won't turn out. And there's the expectation level. The expectation level is so low on Jeremy Corbyn, he can only come up. And the expectation level is huge on the Tories to romp home. And they need to guard against that. I think with Linton in there, they will. But
Linton Crosby, Sir Linton Crosby, Sir a man Linton who Crosby. You have worked very closely with, and a man who has run some successful campaigns, 2012 mayoral, the 2015 general election. What will Linton be doing right now, Giles? What will they be doing to prepare for this election?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of things they'll be doing. I mean, obviously, it was, it's a snap election. They'll be drawing up a grid for the next 7 weeks, setting out sort of all the key stories, all the key interventions they want to make.
How many of them will involve a Jeremy Corbyn coalition propped up by the SNP?
I'm not involved, so I don't know. But I think
one a day.
Clearly, the key in all these things is to gain momentum. And last time, one of the factors why we won was the whole idea of a Labour SNP coalition. It became the monkey on Labour's back. They didn't deal with it quickly at the start, and there was a huge opportunity cost there. So I think that's one thing they'll be doing. And I think the messaging has already been mapped out. You saw that at PMQs. It's going to be fought on the economy, it's going to be fought on leadership, and it's going to be fought on stability. I think there's an issue for Corbyn at the moment because I don't think he's got a distinctive message. He needs to carve one out. The other issues which, you'll be looking at if you're inside CCHQ are the candidates. It's getting the candidates match fit. You're going to have a lot of people.
How do you get a candidate match fit, Giles?
Well,
I think for a jog.
Yeah. The issue here is basically that some of them will be catapulted into, they're not used to huge media scrutiny. They haven't got their campaign literature ready. So I think that's really important. I think the issue around the war chest and having the money to spend on the election will be one they'll be looking at. I don't think necessarily be a problem. And I actually think this might be the first proper digital election. And what I mean by that was, during 2015, I thought one story a day wouldn't sustain us, but it did.
The same story every day. I'll tell you that now because I was on that 2015 Tory bus and I remember those press releases.
I think probably Brexit showed that stories would last for 3 hours, then they'd go. So I think that's interesting. But also I think because everything's happened so quickly, all the parties won't necessarily have the army of activists ready to go on the ground. And I think, therefore, digital becomes more important in terms of reaching people and reaching them quickly.
One thing where I'd agree with Giles, it's going to be very important for the Conservatives to sustain the idea that actually this is a contest and that Jeremy Corbyn could be Prime Minister. One of the sort of auxiliary reasons why that matters is because it's very important, where there is, I don't think, a threat to Theresa May's position seriously, but a sort of a soft flank on the Tories is those areas where the Lib Dems were sort of annihilated because of the prospects of Ed Miliband and Nicola Sturgeon somehow forming an arrangement in government, and people just wanting the Tories to sort of block any alternative in 2015. Now, if people who've traditionally tactically voted Lib Dem or sort of soft Remain-y Tories, who might once have voted Lib Dem in some of these places like Twickenham or Eastbourne or Lewes or these sorts of places, are minded to go back to the Lib Dems, it's going to be very important for the Tories to say, well, steady on. Do you actually seriously, what if Tim Farron does a deal with Jeremy Corbyn? Tim Farron, for that very reason, has basically ruled it out. So, Jeremy Corbyn is you know, perversely, he's actually toxic even to people who would be part of a so-called progressive alliance, because they need to claw back. Everyone needs to find some soft Tory, pro-European Tory voters to bolster their position.
And on that point, Sonia, I mean, the Prime Minister, very clear, she wants to make it about Brexit. She wants to deliver the will of the people. And as we know very well, it was not the will of 48% of people. Isn't there going to be an incentive to lots of people to vote against the Conservatives in order to try and stop this march towards what they may see as a hard Brexit?
I think there'll be some of that. And I think, as Raf says, where you'll see that sort of dynamic matter is in areas where Conservatives are holding seats, but there is a real Lib Dem challenge and those areas voted Remain. But I think it would be really easy to overstate that. So I think it will matter in, you know, maybe 10 seats around the country. I think actually, if you look at all the polling that's been done since the referendum, you know, yeah, 40% of people voted to Remain, but quite a lot of those people have sort of got their heads around the idea of us leaving the European Union, and they don't feel that strongly about it. So I think it's quite easy if you're somebody who feels very strongly still against Brexit, which, you know, I do, I very strongly back Remain. I'm not sure that we're in even a 48%. We might be in, you know, be looking sort of 20, 22% really, if you look at the polling.
And Giles, you worked for David Cameron through the referendum. You were, yeah, of course, a, you know, pure Remainer at that point. How are you feeling about it all? Are you relaxed about Brexit?
Yeah, look, I think we are where we are. We've got to make it work, and there's no point in being retrospective. I think the big challenge for any government now is how you offer certainty in an uncertain environment, and how you convey to the eyes of the world that we're still a stable nation and you should come and invest here.
More stable than David Cameron suggested we might be. I mean, do you look back and think some of those tactics were too over the top?
Look, I'm not going to sort of, I think there's been a lot written about what happened in the referendum. I'm not going to go over it, but I think it is important to look forward. I think what Theresa May is doing, it will give her that mandate, which offers more stability and certainty and gives her more time to negotiate with the EU if she wins. So I do think it is a sensible move.
And just one point on Sir Lyndon Crosby. As we know, he's had some negative campaigning behind him. He wasn't particularly kind to Ken Livingstone. He wasn't particularly kind to Ed Miliband. People I've spoken to in Downing Street suggesting that for now, they don't want it to be a personal attack on Jeremy Corbyn. What's the chance of that holding in place?
I don't think it will be a personal attack on Jeremy Corbyn. I think you saw the battle lines, as I said, drawn at PMQs. It's going to be about the economy, it's going to be about stability, and it's going to be about leadership. But, you know, look, politics is a brutal game. And, you know, Linton's not running a sweet shop. But, you know, I think...
look, he's what he taught you?
He's an effective campaigner. His record speaks for itself. And actually, one of his great strengths is in the office, is he speaks to everyone from the intern through to all the senior people. And he's very good at running a campaign. And in politics, you know, often you get too many people getting involved. And Linton's big strength is that, you know, he takes the overarching view. And I know he won't have taken on this role without saying, I'm in charge and I'm going to be running this campaign. And you'll see a ruthlessly effective campaign run.
And also, Theresa May doesn't need to get down sort of bit to a lower level and start getting into a mud fight with Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, there are plenty of people who will do that for her. Candidates at local level, half of Fleet Street. So
some of the Labour Party.
Some of the Labour Party.
And actually, the Labour Party is going to be quite a big part of her strategy from the sound of Prime Minister's questions today. I mean, she named quite a few comments by Labour MPs against their own leader.
Yeah, and I think loads of Labour MPs are going to find themselves in quite an awkward spot. And we've already seen, for example, John Wiscock, who's been very, very critical of the Labour leadership.
Think he should be out of the party?
I don't, because I think he's being upfront. He's saying, these are my politics, this is what I believe. I didn't back Jeremy Corbyn for the leadership election. I'm not standing under a banner of thinking that he should be Prime Minister. Now, it's a very difficult position for an MP to find themselves in. But you know what? I kind of admire his honesty in some ways.
Giles, if a Tory had said that in 2015, do you know what? David Cameron's rubbish. I don't want him to be Prime Minister. I wouldn't vote for him to be Prime Minister. What would you as a party have done to them?
Yeah, they'd have been out the door.
No question about it.
No question. And
can I just get you, Raf, to just put aside any of your feelings about Jeremy Corbyn for one moment. Imagine you are his chief strategist. What would your advice be? How could he start to close that gap, which, as we've seen in some polls, has been 21 points?
I think he probably has to try and do something of what Jean-Luc Mélenchon has done in France. He needs to own the fact that he is seen as somehow distinct from ordinary politics. No, he's not going to be anything other than a radical left candidate. So just soak the rich, nationalise utilities, just offer this thing that's shock and awe. Wow, no one has actually stood up and said this kind of hard, radical, economic left, take back control of the economy stuff before, and just and own it so dynamically that people are having to argue about it on his terms. And you might find a few people saying, blimey, I'd never thought of that before. That's not maybe not such a bad idea. He's not going to become prime minister, but at least, frankly, he will be able to go
if
down
he is, you'll
his
eat
head
your
held
hat.
High, you know, do you know what I mean?
Sonia, when we were covering the election of his leadership, the second leadership election last year, I mean, some of the people who love Jeremy, they haven't just drunk Kool-Aid. They have drunk something much stronger than that. My goodness,
Corbynade.
Something there that people connect to. And in fact, it's something that even attracts, you know, for example, a huge group of coders. So you were talking about a digital election, Giles. Jeremy's actually got an incredible amount of support from people who are very, very savvy in digital terms. He used that in the leadership. Could some of this be used to help the Labour Party back into contention?
Well, any support is good support, but the whole point about running to be Prime Minister of the country is that you can build a sufficient enough support base to win an election. Now, the polling shows that Jeremy Corbyn isn't doing that. He hasn't been doing that since he became leader of the Labour Party. So you can light a few hearts on fire, and I've got no doubt that that's what Jeremy Corbyn does. And, you know, we know that's how he sort of built such an effective base within the Labour membership. But the Labour membership consists of like a few hundred thousand people. There are millions and millions of voters that Jeremy Corbyn has to win over if he wants to be Prime Minister. So a few coders here, a few Labour Party members there, it's just not going to cut it.
And Giles, you're being very positive about Theresa May. You're still drinking the Tory Kool-Aid. I suppose one question is, it's clearly quite a different operation than under David Cameron. The meetings are much tighter. I mean, really extraordinary that they managed to keep this so tight until the last moment. Only a handful of people, none of her cabinet, knew until the final few days. Just what do you see as the differences in the way the operation runs?
It's quite hard for me to say because I'm not inside number 10 anymore. But I think it's credit to them that they kept this private, they kept this secret. I think it bodes well for the election campaign, because one of the most destabilising things you can get is leaks during a campaign. And clearly it's not a leaky operation. And it is about discipline. And, you know, the things which really derail campaigns are the leaks and things which you don't expect.
What was the worst leak you remember?
It wasn't so much a leak. I think the things which, you know, which were put us on the back foot with the UKIP defections, I think a couple of sex scandals as well. I thought the 2015 election was going to be the election where someone got caught off camera or on camera phone saying something untoward. It didn't happen. But I think in this day and age, with the huge levels of transparency, that's always the danger. And that's why I mentioned earlier on about the candidates needing to be match fit, because it's those candidates who go off message which then blow up and become national stories, and they're not used to that level of scrutiny.
And you know some of the figures inside Downing Street pretty well, I guess. I mean, the Director of Communications, Katy Perrier, has gone as part of this. What do you think's behind that?
I'm not inside, I don't know. But look, they've got, you know, people like James Slack, who's a former political editor of the Daily Mail, who are very capable people. So whilst I'm sure it's a blow, they'll recover and carry on. And I think, look, in all of this, I think the fact they have someone like Linton there, who's got this great overarching view, who understands comms, who understands policy, who understands fundraising, who's been there and done that, will offer a great sense of continuity and stability. The planning will be absolutely rigorous, and there'll be no stone left unturned. I think, you know, and there's always the small details which matter. I mean, one thing which really struck me after the 2015 election was we had our first meeting of the day at 5:45 a.m. and Labour, I read it, had their first meeting at 7:30 or 7:45, which to me struck me as being crazy because you'd miss an hour and a half of the news cycle. By 6:15 or 6 o'clock, we had our lines settled. If there was a problem, it was ironed out, and people were ready for the morning round, so we were never caught on the back foot. We weren't panicking, and we had more time. And it was that kind of attention to detail, which sounds like a small thing, but actually pays huge dividends.
Oh, well, maybe if Jeremy Corbyn listens to this, he will pull forward that morning meeting. Just very quickly to finish off, I just want to ask one more question, and then I want to get a prediction from all of you. Raph, the Daily Mail says Theresa May is trying to crush her saboteurs. Do you think that that is a reasonable depiction? And do you think there is any chance that she will ever criticise that headline?
First of all, I'll answer the second bit first. Look, Theresa May has got where she is today in a number of ways, but part of that strategy has involved never spending more than 12 hours on the wrong side of a line that has been drawn by the Mail, Telegraph, the Sun and the Express. I don't see any reason why she should change that system. It's worked very well for her. So that answers that bit. In terms of crushing saboteurs, look, I think there's a very interesting duality in Theresa May's character. She's a very devout woman, she's a very pious person, and she believes very strongly in a sense of her own political vocation. And she's not unlike Gordon Brown in that respect, actually. And what that means is she would never consider herself to be doing anything shabby or cynical or dishonest. And she's sort of setting herself up as a sort of mother of the nation, delivering Brexit for everyone. And so I think she quite sincerely feels that any kind of political dissent is a kind of unbelief. There's something slightly morally unpleasant about it, and she quite sort of sincerely, you know, thinks it's just wrong and wants to bring the whole country together. I think she literally has a tin ear. She has no sense of smell when it comes to people like, you know, me and Sonia, who are sitting thinking, feeling completely alienated by this, and think, hang on, that's the language of the gulag. What are you talking about? How dare you?
Who do you vote for?
This election, yeah. I shall read the manifestos and follow the campaign closely and come to a decision and vote for the party and the candidates that I think will most effectively hold her to account on the Brexit question, obviously.
It's the Tony Blair approach to the election. Sonia, prediction, what will the majority be?
I reckon the Tories will have a majority. I'm going to go quite optimistic for them, 60 to 70, and I reckon Labour might lose around 50 seats. Giles?
Last year's taught me not to get into predictions, but I think she'll have a healthy majority at the end of it.
I think Sonia's probably about right there, actually. It's hard. Obviously, it's impossible to say. It's a long campaign, and the thing about a long campaign is people get bored, journalists get bored, candidates get tired, people make mistakes. So by sort of the end of May, early June, things will start to get hairy and weird things will start happening.
That is all we've got time for this week. Thank you for listening to Politics Weekly. I'm Anushka Astana. The producer was Jason Phipps. Goodbye.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code POLITICSWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.